Cthulhu Uigu. We love
Cthulhu-goo.
You. Cthulhu goo. Yep. Say that five times fast. Sequence break two, Cthulhu goo. Okay.
Yes.
Right. There you go. I got you, Graham.
Welcome to Horror Movie Survival Guide, Disco Citizens, the podcast where gorehounds
and best friends, Terry Gamble
and Julia Marchesi, break down a different horror movie each week,
exploring a multitude of genres, subgenres,
and sub-subgenres,
classic and cult,
international
and underground flicks alike, determining which films are the goriest,
and offering up Horror Movie Survival Guide tips
to help you stay alive.
Well, hey, Disco Citizens, welcome to Horror Movie Survival Guide. I am Julia.
And I'm Terry, and Julia has got me excited about a whole nother episode today. Tell us all about it, Julia.
Well, we are talking about 2017's Sequence Break. The title of this episode is Hit Reset, and the tagline for this movie is, It Will Pull You In.
Ooh.
So this was written and
yes,
directed.
It will.
Yes, written and directed by Graham Skipper. So we are big fans of Graham Skipper. I first found him out when Stuart Gordon was doing the stage musical version of Reanimator here in the LA, which was fantastic. And I got to see multiple times. I'm so lucky.
You got to be covered in blood from Graham Skipper.
Yes, I did. It was glorious. So Graham Skipper played Herbert West, and he was absolutely brilliant. And I followed his career ever since. And he's been in a bunch of other movies. Almost Human I have on VHS. I'm sure we'll cover that at some point. He's great in that. And he's in Suitable Flesh, which we just covered for Joe Lynch, and is clearly a writer director himself. And
and we've interviewed him here on the show too.
We did. And he has a new movie that's in the festivals right now that is going to be coming out soon as well. So I can't wait for that. Very excited. So yes, listen to our interview with Graham. We talk about the Danny Boyle's movie Sunshine with him, which was really cool.
Absolute classic. I think that's one of those ones that's underseen as well that we are always happy to highlight. I had a couple of friends actually last week. They were like, oh my God, this movie. And they like posted, I think, about it. I was like, yes. Absolutely terrifying, and it feels like it's happening right now. It's so good. It's a great one. So
I got to see Sequence Break actually when it played in theaters here in LA with Graham in attendance, and it was I was very excited, and I of course I always want to support him. We also have gone to his Rated R Speakeasy, which he does here in LA and also in Austin, Texas, and if you live in either of those two places, you need to go because it's a fantastic horror-themed speakeasy.
It's a hoot. I am still scarred from the last one in the best possible way. Like, the entrance that we had to go through, I still think about on a very regular basis. Thank you so much for that, Graham. Leaving a mark on your guests. Absolutely delightful.
It was
absolutely
like having to push through a tunnel of dark, nightmarish blackness. It was really fantastic.
It's kind of like sequence breaking. It's kind of like breaking through to the other side. So thank you.
Break on through to the other side.
Break. Sequence break. Okay.
So this movie is based on the urban legend of Polybius, which is a video game that was supposedly surfaced in Portland in the early 80s as a part of a government mind control experiment, which produced addictive and psychoactive effects in its players, including seizures, amnesia, insomnia, night terrors, and hallucinations. And it was visited by the Men in Black, who would come to collect the data from the machine. And then 1 month after its release in 1981, it disappeared without a trace. So pretty fucking cool thing to base your movie on.
So is this like some MK Ultra kind of weirdness, like, essentially, where they're just like, yeah, we're going to just do some weird testing on y'all people. And there it is. Wild.
Yeah. Yes,
okay.
But MK Ultra is real. So
yes,
you know, Polybius is not, but this is.
We don't know that.
That's true.
Starting conspiracies right here, right now. You're welcome, fans.
It's already started. It's all right.
We're just continuing it on. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let's meet our main character. Let's meet Oz, played by Chase Williamson, who works in an arcade repair shop alongside Jerry Lyle Knaus. They're so cute and really
adorable.
Yeah. And you know that Terry and I are both me particularly, are a big physical media advocate, right? And I So when you have something like an arcade shop, which is, you know, antiquated, right, and it is something, but the people who are working behind it are so in love with it. I feel that deeply, you know?
You feel the love. There was actually an arcade shop. I wonder where he shot this too, because there's one over in Glendale that I used to live around the corner from. I remember seeing them roll the things up and a lot of like the arcade games like around town, because there's quite a few fun little bars that have popped up that have them, you know, more for all of us adults who want to relive our youths or continue on our youths, right? Playing wonderful games available. So it just made me feel really nostalgic for that and just, oh, delightful. And it's Oz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, adorable. And so kind of folk from the moment we meet him, laser focused on video games. Like, it's really like he doesn't seem to have any kind of life outside of this.
We get that straight away when the boss Jerry asks Oz, he's like, "Hey, so a cute girl just walked through here. Did you notice her? She seemed to be kind of checking you out." He's like trying to like yenta for them a little bit and get them together. He's like, let's make a thing. And he's like, Oz is like, "What? There was a girl here? I didn't even notice." Like, he's like, I was like, oh, baby. He's one of those ones you literally have to like spoon feed him and be like, "Hello, I'm into you. Please look at me. I think you're hot." And he'll still be like, "Wait, what? Pretty girl saying hi to me." He's that guy. We love those guys. Oh, God. Well, yeah. I've just revealed too much about myself right now.
No, but it's also, you know, we have, you know, a thing for the cute boy killer, if you will. And he isn't a killer in this movie, but he is turning into a kind of a villainous
obsessive.
Mm-hmm. So we appreciate that here on this show. So unfortunately, Jerry gives him the talk and says, "Hey, we're going to have to close up shop here. We have about a month left. You've worked so hard. I'll give you everything, split everything 50-50 because he's got nothing saved. And boss is going to go up north for a couple of weeks. So just like hang out while I'm gone," which sets him up nicely to be killed and then not heard from again, because he's not going to create suspicion, because poor Jerry is going to die immediately.
Oh, womp womp. It's okay. Poor Jerry. But you know what's going to happen is, you know, Oz is going to go out and celebrate and drink and, you know, not oblivious to what's happening to Jerry at the moment. And he's going to run into his paramour, dear Tess, at the bar. And she clocks him at a bar, which I love, which does not have the TV on. Beautiful. So he's staring at the TV, though. And she's like, "Hey, what you watching? Ha, ha, ha." He's like, there's nothing on the TV. Again, girl's trying to make a cute joke, trying to do a meet cute. He just doesn't get it.
She's played by Fabienne Therese, and this is a character who has clearly been watching him for quite some time, and this is all that he has not noticed her, but she has noticed him, and so she's just going to move on in, and he's the boss comes in, Jerry, and there is a man there who says, "You weren't supposed to be here," and kills him. There was a package that was on the ground. So what is in the package?
What's in the package? And why does he have to get killed? It's so sad. It's like, there's always somebody who's not supposed to be there. I feel like that's like the crux of, like, you know, evil plots at night when you go to some sort of building or something like that.
But I also like that Tess wants to Oz's number, and he says that he doesn't have a phone. And she's like, "What?" And but this is the thing, is like, in cell phones in movies are so annoying to have to write into your film every time now. And there's very clunky ways to write around that. But I feel like I buy it from this guy that
this guy really does not have a phone. Yeah, he totally
just
doesn't.
Pay phones. And I was like, wow, like it would be it's a very specific character choice in this time that people would go, right. Oh, okay, you've made a choice to not be connected to the rest of the world, which is a very interesting choice.
Yeah, it's like very Bill Murray or whatever of him, right? Like, notoriously just has like a landline, you know, at his house. And so I think there's something to be said for that. And just also, he really is not a people person, like, at all. So he's like, "Yeah, if you want to talk to me, you find me at these places." And she's done it, right? He's like, "You kind of did it. You found me at work. You found me at where I go to, like, unwind. So, and I go to a place that doesn't have the TV on. Do you know what I mean, though? Like, it's like I go to places that are not about like modern media or anything like that. He really is, as she says, you're an antique. And I was like, yep. And it's interesting, too. I shout out to our friend Billy Ola in San Francisco. He and I share, send pictures of payphones to each other, just anywhere they are around the world. And then I always check them to see if they work. I was at Kaiser Permanente this last week getting having an appointment. There were payphones still there with all the stuff still on them. Picked up the no dial tones. I was like, oh, even though they look like they're the functional ones because they still had all their like parts, they don't even work in there anymore. I was like, wow, we've really crossed the line now. Like even at the hospital, payphones aren't even available. Devastating.
But they're kind of needed for like emergencies and stuff, right?
You just have to go probably ask the desk and use like their regular phone, right?
But I mean, like in the world, it makes sense to have them for emergency type situations. But they
but
don't
even homeless
anymore,
people at this point, or sorry, unhoused people at this point have payphones. You know what I mean, though? So it's like it's a strange world.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Sorry. Anyway, my phone and old media rant. Excuse me. I shall step down from my box now. Excuse me, Julia. Let's talk about the motherboard in this envelope that Oz is about to find.
Okay, so Oz buys the motherboard. He puts it into a game. He's like, ooh, mystery game. I mean, what video game nerd would not fall for that? Installs it, plays the game, and it affects him immediately. It actually blows him backwards. It like makes him like the game growls. He pukes, and he has a horrible nightmare about his hand turning into black glass and shattering. And like this game is a potent game. I love the graphics they did for this. I think these are really cool.
Super fun. And then he wakes up late because he's supposed to meet Tess the next day. And it seems like he's like hungover almost from playing the game. Like it wasn't the drinking because he didn't really go crazy with her like at the bar. It's really that game has really affected him. And so it's like, you know, she comes and meets him at the arcade place because she wants to play some of the games. And she tells him it's almost like you're bringing the dead back to life while you're playing, you know, the way you resuscitate all these games and the way you're such a clinician, like helping them. And like, cause he either rebuilds or, you know, like he's like he's the game tech. He fixes it for her and she loves it. And he watches her play and he's clearly smitten. Just like, she's just like so cute. Cause she's all focused and she like actually loves it. And yeah.
They have tacos on the roof together and have have a cute conversation. And she kisses him and he has a little bit of a freak out and says that you're definitely the prettiest girl that's ever kissed me. And like, oh, this is very cute. So meanwhile,
but he also has a moment where there's static and weird shit, though, too. It looks like the video game is fucking up his life. So it's like as she's talking, all of a sudden it looks like she's like in this like weird, like freaking in hell. Like it's like red. And like she's like looks like her skin is coming off her face or some shit. And you're like, she's red and evil now. And then they kiss. So he has like a moment and she's giving a little manic pixie dream a little, too, but also nightmare. So it's manic pixie nightmare is what I'm going to call her in that moment. Right.
Yeah, he seems to be kind of glitching in real life.
Yeah. And so the murderer guy comes back that night while Oz is there to play again. And he says, oh, the white eye is pulling you in, huh? Yeah, it's working. He's like, wait, what is going on? He's like, don't just look into the void. Let the void look into you. And like, I don't know. That reminded me of the, I always like to bring it back to Sondheim just for Sierra. It reminded me of the little old man that's in Into the Woods. He like, first I seen this and he like walks away, like gives you like a riddle. And that's exactly what I felt like just happened. I was like, oh, Sondheim right here. Thank you, Graham Skipper.
Well, Graham Skipper's a musical theater guy, so I'm sure he knows his Sondheim. Mm-hmm. And so now it's the TV. He starts to play the game again. The game actually electrocutes the murderer. So now the murderer can't play anymore. So now the next time.
Well, he also slits his own throat, the murderer guy, too. Is that now or is that later?
No, that's later.
Later. Sorry.
Spoilers. Not just
I'm
kidding,
so sorry. We're already spoiling the whole thing.
I know. It's all right. So we're about to get real squishy and Cronenbergian up in this bitch with this sequence where Terry is grabbing her. So Oz is playing the next. Dallas is playing, and it starts to have a crazy sexual experience with this.
It gets ooey gooey, and all of a sudden the game pieces all of a sudden look like they turn into like mush, like they look all of a sudden like they're like gelatinous kind of like inside, and he seems to be oozing into the game like he's Alan Cumming, great artist.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. But so the next day when he sees Tess again, he says he wants to design a video game and he wants it to be perfect, and so that's why he can't do it. But
and she Tess says, "This is it for you. This is it for you." And he's like, "This is the end." She's like, "No. This is like the thing you're supposed to do. Like, you found your life's purpose right here, right now. That's what you're supposed to do. The reason the store is closing right now is because you need to design your game. You're always supposed to do that. You have all this knowledge. You have everything you need. This is your moment. It's like the Beatles hitting America. You know what I mean? It's like, this is it. That's it for you. You guys are about to like explode." So, anywho, yes.
She's hyping him up. She's into it, but she's also starting to feel the pull of the game, and it is hypnotizing her in not a nice way. So she's kind of grossed out by the area that the game is in and doesn't want to be near it.
She asks, "Is it haunted?" And he's like, "Yeah, maybe possessed by demons or something, you know?" Yeah. So, yeah.
So we do get a little bit of some sexiness, but then there's also, you know, this movie has a good job of between what's real and what isn't real as he starts to get more and more mind fucked by this game. So
could it be a little Cthulhu type of thing to his brain happening? I feel a little Stuart Gordon influence. I can feel it.
Thank goodness for Stuart Gordon. Oh my goodness. What a man. Not absolutely only delightful. Like his movies being amazing, but also the people that he's influenced that you can see his influence on.
Oh, yeah.
Simple Flesh, Jolene, Jesus Christ, good stuff. So there is like fleshiness going on. They are kissing in real life, but what is going on in real life and what is not? And it just, like, most of it's in his head. But then the murderer was also watching them sleep.
After their hookup. And you're like, wait, what? Oh.
So. Why is Oz not locking the doors? Does the murderer have a key? How is he getting in? Because after the first time that he just kind of wanders in, is it something that he's...
I think if you know how to get into a place, you're going to get into a place. Locking a door is not really... doesn't really keep anybody out.
To me, walking into a place, I understand that he's walking into like a business and it's not necessarily his house or anything. But still, if you're walking in, there's someone who's not supposed to be there. I would freak out the first time, and the second time really, really be like, and he doesn't seem fazed by it. So I don't know if it's something like the influence of the game and this murder is connected to it somehow. I'm not clear on how it works, but he keeps trying to turn the, like, Oz keeps turning the machine off. Murderer keeps turning the machine on. So then Tess is finally like, she wants to play it. And he's like, no, it's going to make you puke. It's going to ruin your night. It's not good. And that's when the murderer attacks. But
he tells Oz before that too. He's like, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
You have a responsibility.
Yes. You have a responsibility. And the murder guy is back and he tells Oz he has a path. And I was like, Oz definitely has a path down the yellow brick road. I'm sorry, but that's where my brain went. And I was like, yes, you have a path to follow. You are Oz, and everything you're going towards is green. I am obsessed with that. Because all the Uzi stuff has been kind of like green tinge so far. So green glow from the machine.
But also white kind of gooey stuff all over the board.
We don't have to talk about that. But yes.
Okay. All right.
No, it's fine. It's sure. It's yep. It's that. It's that. Okay, it's well, that, Graham. Oh, my God.
Dirty boy.
Oh my God, we love you. Oh God, what a man.
Stop. You're making me giggle.
I'm so sorry, but it's true. We love you, Graham.
So Oz translates the binary code on the board that he finds on the motherboard, and it translates to sequence break. So sequence break, it says, in video games, the act of performing actions out of the intended linear order, often used to beat a game unusually quickly or to push the game as far as the code will allow, rarely to break the game's code entirely. So yeah. That sets you up for cool stuff. You're like, oh.
Yeah, he's got to push the limits of the freaking game. And he just can't get enough of the stuff. He's going to get consumptive, and he seems like he's getting consumed completely when he pushes this far. He goes so far that he meets himself in the game, like a version of himself. And he's mm-hmm. going to literally, it's like, oh, shoot. Oh, when you break apart like that, I've only done that once. It was a really crazy trip. Don't have to talk about it on the podcast, but maybe for the Patreon. Only Ooh, once have I met myself. Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, cool. I took a break for a little while. Grandma Terry's an old party person. I'll say it. And so I met myself, but he meets himself and they scream at each other. And then, of course, once you do that and like time, space, continuum, he's going to puke again because it's like, whoa, I just saw myself. And then he's going to black out, of course. And then all of a sudden he's going to puke wires out of his body. And, you know, we're going to make it to the next day. Thank goodness. But he is out of it. And Tess is like very worried.
Yeah, when you're pulling wires out of your mouth and like meeting yourself, you're like, oh, this is hardcore.
Maybe not
stuff.
The drugs so you he, wanted to do. Yeah.
No, perhaps not. And he forgot their date. I mean, we can understand why, as the audience, we're like, oh yeah, I could see how you could forget a date during that. I could see how that would happen.
If you schismed really yourself, yes.
Yeah. You're like, I forgot we had to get some coffee. But he's starting to get real aggro, and you know, he's like, the white eye, it looks at you, doesn't it? And the murderer is still there. He's trying to play the game. The game won't let it. He's still obsessed with this thing. But Oz and Tess are starting to drift apart a little bit, but because he's starting to get real weird. But Tess lets herself into the shop at night and starts to play the game and freaks out.
Yeah. It's not good. And so she, the machine glows green for her, but she had snuck in again. You're like, why is the door open? I'm like, I think it's because of the murder guy in the machine. Like, do you know what I mean? They're like leaving these open paths for people, because she had just been drinking at the bar and decided to walk by on the way home, you know, from there. And that's when she got pulled in. And she laughs and does this maniacal kind of crazy lady laugh. And I was like, oh no. And she like breathes into the machine as the Wonder Man watches her, and she gets more and more hypnotized. And all of a sudden she goes through like all the emotions. At first it seems like a joyous thing. And then she's like crying and laughing, and then she faints, and then it looks like she dies. And you're like, oh no. And Oz is going to find Tess at the shop, and it appears she's dead.
And she has a conversation with the murderer, who just says, break the sequence, be the man I could never be, slits his own throat. And Oz knows somehow instinctually that if he can play the game, he can fix it. He can turn this around. Doesn't have to be.
Because he's already seen his other self. I think he realizes like, oh, maybe there's another version of me that can do this. And he asks the guy, he's like, no, why did you do this? He's like, no, we built this. And you're like, wait, what? And he's like, yeah, we built this together. So maybe in another time and space continuum, this guy had found Oz before, or maybe he's like another version of him. Still don't know. Still unclear, but love it. So
And I do love that we don't ever know that, like, no. He just, you know, is he because if he's supposed to be like a man in black who's there to check the data, he doesn't seem like that type, right? He seems like a different kind of version of somebody who's been freaked out by this game. So it's I like sometimes when you do get no backstory on somebody, it bothers me, and this one I'm like, I'm fine with that. He's a mysterious man, and we don't even get his name. He's listed on IMDb as the man, so I like that.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. So, he goes into the game, and it's like dreams to waking, you know, kind of like in these infinite possibilities that he's in there trying to break the sequence. And if she's still alive, he says, all things are possible. Yet she has to still be alive. If you told me all things are possible, got to break the sequence. So he's, you know, looking between the ones and zeros. She's telling him, he hears her voice. Look between the ones and O's, what ones and zeros. And then all of a sudden, and hit reset. And all of a sudden, looks like he's massaging some like Cthulhu beast or something inside there. And there's a bunch of stuff going on in there that we're going to see, that, you know, electrical things pulling his brains out. There's a blue room, a red room version of himself. Like you see, literally see him like side by side. We get split screen of kind of the two different versions of him. So
I thought that was, that's probably my favorite part of the film is kind of the split screen. I wish we got more of it. We do get it. Mm-hmm. but it's very cool because to me, I was like, oh, okay, you have like player one, player two, and like that's the idea.
I also like, was like red pill, button, blue pill.
Yeah, of course, and blue and blue button. So it's really cool that you get to say, okay, this is his first try and what happens, and then if you get second try and what happens. Always fun to see a movie not only go crazy with color at the end, but also to really break out all of the visual tricks and bells and whistles and stuff. Super fun.
And so, of course, you know, Oz is going to glow green looking between the ones and zeros and goes through a flashback and time lapse. And all of a sudden he opens up the shop back in time. We get this full reverse of, I think, the whole movie, essentially. Right. And Jerry's, you know, telling him, oh, it's the end of an era. And it looks like he's got a whole second chance at his another life. Did he break the sequence? Is he back? Is everything going to be OK? Is he still going to see Tess? I hope so.
Yeah, he is able to in his way break it, and it's very 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 cool. So we get all the way back around to the beginning where he's now going to find an artist to design his game that he's been wanting to make, laser balls, and we'll essentially get to meet Tess again and hopefully save Jerry's life. That would be helpful. I would say ways to survive this movie. When you get a mysterious motherboard in the mail, don't put it in. And I know that there's curiosity there. I get it. It would be like if somebody left a blank VHS at my doorstep. Would I watch it?
Like the ring is going to suck you in. Yeah. You're going to watch the fucking ring. I know you will, Julia. You know you will. And now I know what to leave for you. I'm just going to randomly leave you tapes.
But see, the final girl in me is like, don't watch that because there's not going to be anything good on that. Who would do that? That's psychotic, right? So this is I feel like this is how you do it. But it appears that, you know, it appears in the film that it's made specifically for him, right?
Right.
Because or it could only have one owner at one time was kind of like the feeling of it.
Yeah.
So.
And also the fact that he had to kill Jerry. He was like, Jerry can't open this. It's not for him. It's got to be for Oz, right?
Right.
Like he knew who it was for. So.
And so where did it come from? Why him? So many questions. Because it's like we're not talking about it being in a, because like Polybius was like in a public arcade, right? This is like anybody could play it. This is talking about like one person at one time. And what
is this game? Guy was probably jumping his sequence and this was part of him jumping the sequence, right? Whoever this other guy was. And so maybe if he got Oz to do this, he would be set free as well, right? And so maybe that's his goal.
One of those things where like you rope the next person in to save the next person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. I think that's my guess, but I loved it. Yeah. How do we survive though? Do you just not put the thing in?
I mean, not putting the motherboard in is how you survive. I think that, but also if it's specifically made for you, there doesn't seem to be a way to, because it clearly has mystical powers beyond just the game itself, right? There's something else going on in it because it's affecting, like it affects Tess in the range of where the game is physically. So,
right. And even Tess was like, yeah, if someone left a King's Quest floppy disk hanging out around, she's like, you would play it. Like you, if you saw some vintage thing, like hanging around, like you're going to do it. You got to do it.
I know. And we know the pull of such things. And like humans are so curious. And I feel like if you're someone like Tess, if you feel the game telling you no, don't play it. If you're someone like Oz, just don't put it in. That's the only answer. And that answer will never suffice. So I feel like it's kind of a hard one. And what would happen if Tess wasn't around? Would he have just like, what is the game? What is the game's ultimate goal? What does it want? Does it want to absorb Oz physically into itself? Is that the goal?
So what it seems like, because it seems like it pretty much almost has him, right?
Yeah.
So
but then he'd be trapped within the game would be the idea.
I think so. Okay. Or trapped in the world. Yeah. And he might have to go out and try to find someone else to rope in, you know, next if he wasn't able to defeat it. So yeah.
Okay. How many people are trapped in the game?
I don't know. So many. We could do a sequel. sequence.
Yes. I would definitely watch Secrets Breaks 2, Electric Blue.
Yes.
Please, Graham, make it happen. Yes. So let's talk about some gore factor.
Sure.
One is not enough blood to fill a Dixie cup. 2 is a puddle of blood, 3 is enough blood to gross out the average viewer, 4 a bathtub of blood, and 5 is run for the barf bag. This is a 3.5 for gore. We get a throat slit and we get some a little bit, but a lot of it's just kind of goo.
Cthulhu ooey goo, ooey goo. We love
Cthulhu
you. Cthulhu goo. Cthulhu goo. Yep. Say that 5 times fast. Sequence break 2, Cthulhu goo. Okay.
Yes.
Right. There you go. I got you, Graham. I'm here with the titles. I'm here to help with the marketing. Whatever you need, you know, you let me know. I got a lot of ideas. Movie ratings. 1 if you're desperate, 2 barely qualifies as a horror film, 3 seen worse, seen better, 4 not too shabby, 5 fantastic-orical. I found this fantastic-orical. I was pleasantly surprised and also disgusted. And so I was like, yay, good job, Grant. You grossed me the fuck out. It was all the ooze and the motherboards, man. I was like, oh God.
I kept cutting to it, letting you watch, letting you ooze. I also gave it a 5. I also think it's fantastic oracle. I think it's so creative. I think it's really unique. I feel like I love how few characters there are. I love how mysterious
people talking in a room.
Seems.
I was like, Julia's going to love this. It's just people talking in rooms.
That's my very favorite genre. And I got it. And like, you know, to have so much mystery surrounding it and have it be intriguing and not annoying that I don't know, which I feel like happens sometimes. So I feel like it's very well written and well done. Just be like, oh, I like it. I don't know what's happening, but it's cool and I'm into it. So well done. So we are 100% behind you, Graham, and everything you do, we will support. And you should watch this movie because it's super, super fun. And check out, keep your eyes open on his social media for his new stuff coming out as well.
Yes, that's hitting the circuit right now. We love it. You can also check us on the internet, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you have want to talk to us about ooze, like let us know, like specifically Cthulhu goo, specifically. It's one of our expertise. I played a lot of Call of Cthulhu in my lifetime. So, you know, let me know. You can check out our Patreon. You can check out our Teespring store if you need merch. We adore you. We love you. Keep it gooey out there, kids.
And I also have 2 other podcasts.
Holy shit. Julia has 2 other podcasts. Oh my God. Tell us about them, Julia.
I'm also on a podcast all about filmmaker Alejandro Jodorowsky called Jodorowsky.
The best title out there. I'm still so jealous. I mean, horror movies I've got is fun, but Jodorowsky is the shit. I'm sorry, but that's like so good.
I know. Thank God for David Crudden. He came up with that, and it is gold. Yes. And then I'm also on The Losers Club, which is all about Stephen King. Terry and I also do a show with the George Romero Foundation called Horror X, which is all about women in horror. And
women and femmes in horror. Yes.
Yeah. It's on their YouTube channel. And Terry, anything else you'd like to plug?
No, I'm just excited about all of those things. Check all those things out. You can find us on the internets all over. We love you so much. Have a beautiful week, Disco Citizens. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Horror Movie Survival Guide is independently produced by Terry Gamble, Julia Marchesi, and Sierra Ryan. Hey, that's me. If you would like to support the show, find us on patreon.com/horrormoviesurvivalguide.